Welcome to the latest episode of On the Case from EG. I'm Jess Harold, and this time we're looking at the recent Court of Appeal decision in Fern versus the Tate Gallery. You are likely familiar with the facts of the case. After all, the first instance decision was named as our number two property case of 2019, so I shall be brief. The owners of luxury apartments at Neo Bankside objected to a viewing gallery installed by the neighbouring Tate Modern on the 10th floor of the Blavatnik building. It offers scores of tourists panoramic views of London, including, from one aspect, straight into their apartments, which themselves benefit from great views as a result of their floor-to-ceiling glass panels. The owners sought an injunction requiring Tate Modern to close or screen off part of the viewing gallery. However, last year, Mr. Justice Mann dismissed their claim. Although he made what was greeted as a landmark ruling that this kind of breach of privacy could, in theory, found a cause of action in nuisance, in this case, he found that the extensive use of glass in the apartments occupied by city dwellers had made them particularly sensitive to overlooking. In his words, it provided a self-induced incentive to gaze, and the owners could install curtains or blinds to protect their privacy. Not content with that, the residents took their case to the Court of Appeal. And to explain what happened next, I'm joined today by James Souter and Megan Davies of Charles Russell Speechleys, who followed the case closely. Welcome both.
Thank you, Jess.
Thanks, Jess.
So, I'm going to ask each of you in turn to put yourselves in the respective positions of the parties. So I gather, James, that you're going to take the appellant's arguments for us.
I am indeed, Jess. Well, I come here 2-0 down, I'm afraid to say. It was interesting. Obviously, we weren't directly involved in the case as a firm, but we've read both the High Court judgment and the Court of Appeal judgment. And the appellants were granted leave to appeal on only one of the grounds that they had originally put forward. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, all of that was broken down into four sub-grounds, all of which really went to whether or not overlooking, in this case, amounted to a nuisance. Mm-hmm. So they were, because the High Court judge had found that it could amount to a legal nuisance, yeah, and created that new law, but then had gone on to say that actually in this case it wasn't actionable, mm-hmm, as a legal nuisance. They were focused on that second part of the argument.
Yeah, understandably so.
Yeah. And so they put forward arguments as to certain assumptions the judge had made in terms of the internal configuration of the apartments, about the judge's failure to have proper regard to the fact that photographs and videos had been put on social media of the flat owner's activities. And they also looked at that second point that you made, which was that the flat owner said that installing privacy film and net curtains might amount to a breach of their leases, and so it was unreasonable, mm-hmm, for the judge to say they should. Well, we'll come back to that later. But I think what's particularly interesting and particularly galling for my side of the argument is that, in fact, both parties, both the Tate and the flat owners, went to the Court of Appeal assuming, mm-hmm, that overlooking could amount to a legal nuisance.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was the Court of Appeal itself which invited submissions on the question of whether or not, as a matter of, mm-hmm, law, that was right, mm-hmm, which I think is quite telling. The Tate itself appeared to accept the judge's decision, but then, encouraged by the Court of Appeal, submissions were put in on both sides about, mm-hmm, the legal point. And ultimately, I think at the end of the hearing, the Tate were allowed to put in a respondent's notice on that point, mm-hmm, which I think, as we will see, was ultimately critical to the outcome.
Indeed it was. So, yeah, Megan, if you could sort of sum up how the Tate went about defending it, the initial decision, and how they responded to the Court of Appeal's directions.
Yes, I think as James has already summarised, the appellants obviously had a much bigger uphill struggle. So the Tate's arguments just were, well, there was no nuisance, and then, encouraged by the Court of Appeal, made the two points that were ultimately successful, mm-hmm, in that there's no cause of action in private nuisance for overlooking, and it's not right, if necessary, to extend the cause of action for private nuisance in view of Article 8.
So, as you've intimated, the Court of Appeal overturned the landmark aspect of last year's decision. Could you just sort of summarise for us how the reasoning differed from the judge below, and why it's important?
So what the Court of Appeal started off with here is that they effectively went back to basics, mm-hmm, by explaining that cause of action in private nuisance of property right in respect of injury to land. It's not an action in respect of discomfort caused to a person. And it gives case law examples like the Hunter and Canary Wharf case, where interference with TV signals caused by building on neighbouring land didn't amount to an action in nuisance despite the annoyance caused to neighbours. And the Court of Appeal thought that the overriding issue in the Tate Modern case here and overlooking cases generally would be the invasion into privacy rather than injury to property. So they made that point and also seemed to put a lot of emphasis on the fact that landowners, absent of course any express restrictions and subject to planning, are free to build on their land as they please, which also of course applies to neighbours then. So they refer to the Australian racing course case where it seems to be suggested, well, if you've got a problem with the overlooking, just erect a higher fence. They also emphasise the fact that locality, when it comes to nuisance, is always going to play a role, but the sensitivities of a claimant will not. So obviously in the High Court decision, the judge put a lot of emphasis on the fact that, as you said in your introduction, it was sort of self-induced because the claimants could take remedial action to prevent the overlooking. The Court of Appeal found that did not come into it. But when it comes to looking at whether something is an actual nuisance, it's assessed objectively. And I found this reference quite funny when I read the judgment. When it comes to locality and that being important, the judge referred to the St. Helens smelting case and gave the example that, well, if a man lives in a street where there are numerous shops and a shop is opened up next door to him, which is carried on in a fair and reasonable way, then how can you have a ground for complaint? So the Court of Appeal then considered the overwhelming weight of judicial authority on what can and cannot constitute a nuisance, including the fact that there's no case which confirms an invasion into privacy by overlooking can be a nuisance, but there are cases which categorically confirm that would not be capable of protection by the law of nuisance, to then arrive at its finding that mere overlooking is not capable of giving rise to a cause of action in private nuisance. And the court then reminded everyone that the law does not always provide a remedy for every annoyance to a neighbour, however considerable that annoyance may be.
I think, if I can just jump in there, there's lots of talk about reasonableness between neighbours and the competing uses of land. And I think acting or appearing here for the flat owners, I accept that if you erect a building next door to mine with any number of windows which look towards my building, that is not going to be a breach of the law of nuisance. I think it's really a question of distinguishing between whether overlooking in any case could be a breach, and assuming it can be, how, you know, when the court will decide that it is. And I think it's really here the sheer volume of overlooking. 600,000 people a year. If the Tate, I don't know if the Tate's open every day, probably most days, but Christmas, that's about 1,650 people looking into your property. And I think that's not a building next door with people living in it. It's a viewing gallery for the specific purpose of people causing their gaze out around into around London and also into the flat. So I think there's two points there. I also just pick up on the privacy. I think the word privacy has been a bit of a problem in this case. Because I don't see this as a case about privacy. Privacy is about paparazzi and long-lensed cameras and famous people. This is about, and I think Megan mentioned the words, and I agree with them, it's about the sort of reasonable enjoyment of your home. It's comfort. And I accept that in most classic nuisance cases, there needs to be some physical interference, vibration, dust, noise. But there is clear authority in, say, rights of light cases, where if someone builds a building which blocks my light, that amounts to a legal nuisance, assuming I have a right. And so I asked the question, would I rather lose a little bit of the light coming into my window, or would I rather have 1,650 people staring through my window every day? And I tell you which one I would rather have.
I'm sure you're not alone on that. And the Court of Appeal also talked about how these competing rights and interests are protected by the planning system. But that's not a lot of you know, obviously planning permission was granted in this case, and it's not a lot of consolation for the residents to be told that, well, that's how your rights are protected if effectively they would say that they haven't been.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to jump in there because it's a bit of a bugbear of mine. I think that the courts, and probably rightly so, work on the assumption that the planning system works as it should and is well-funded and well-operated. And I think those who work with developers know that it's not. And I think the High Court judge found that a detailed review of the planning history of both buildings didn't reveal clearly at all, you know, what was happening with the gallery and what sort of volume of use. So,
But it did reveal that there was always going to be some sort of viewing platform. So going back to the locality point, you just have to think, well, even if it was possible for overlooking to constitute a nuisance, if you take account of the locality and it's in the city of London next to the Tate Modern, which has been there for a very long time, that's had some sort of plan to have a viewing platform for a number of years at the same time that the Neobanksite development was started. So people would have known that, you know, what can you really expect? What can you expect when you're in that locality? I just don't see it.
Yeah. I understand. I mean, I think more generally, I just don't think that planning... It's raised in a number of contexts, in Rights of Light, in the Fen Tigers case, the Speedway case. It's been suggested that the fact that the planning authority has looked at something should weigh into whether or not in private nuisance it is or isn't a private nuisance. And I simply just think that's wrong for the reasons that I mentioned.
So there's clearly room for some disagreement here, and obviously the case has been handled in very different ways by the High Court and then the Court of Appeal. So do you think there's sort of strong potential for this case to go that one stage further and be heard by the Supreme Court?
I think absolutely. I haven't checked as to whether an application... We know that the Court of Appeal refused leave to appeal, as you would expect it to. I don't know if that's been renewed as yet. I'd be very surprised if it isn't, because it is a key point of law. And we have, although we've had the same result in High Court and Court of Appeal, we have had two different outcomes on the fundamental question of whether overlooking can be a nuisance. And so I think the Supreme Court would very much want to have a look at that.
And with your residence hat on, I mean, how would you approach an appeal to the Supreme Court?
I think I would be looking... We've sort of covered some of the topics already, but I'd be looking just to sort of attack some of the key concerns the Court of Appeal raised. I think, you know, the question of whether can overlooking be a legal nuisance, the fact that there never has been a decided case doesn't, to me, count as a reason to say that there couldn't be a case where the overlooking could amount to a legal nuisance. I think it would be very rarely applied, so I don't think the sort of floodgates policy argument, it's not going to prevent development, because as I said, I don't believe that nuisance would engage in the construction of a building next door with windows. But this is not that. You know, this is a very different case for reasons we've decided. I think I've already sort of touched on the privacy point, and I think, you know, this is not developing the law of privacy in any way, shape or form. It's protecting the amenity of the use of people, the use and enjoyment of people's homes. And I don't see, again, any reason why Parliament should have to legislate. Again, the Court of Appeal said Parliament should legislate if we're going to extend privacy to this. Well, I think it's wrong. I think we're just talking about legal nuisance and my right not to be interfered by noise, sound, glare, you know, overlooking, my light being blocked. So I think I've dealt with the concerns about preventing development. One point that I found quite amusing was the Court of Appeal said, and it would be difficult to create an objective test if we let overlooking be a nuisance. Well, you know, the Court of Appeal has spent, you know, the last 200 years grappling with objective tests far more difficult than this. In the case of light, you know, if you build a building next door, it doesn't instantly give rise to a legal nuisance. You have a specialist surveyor, the light is assessed, and ultimately the judge will go and have a look and decide whether it amounts in that case to a nuisance. So I don't think there's any policy reason there. And finally, I think I would major on the fact that if you took from the High Court judgment, the first element, that overlooking can be a legal nuisance, and from the Court of Appeals judgment that the High Court judge was wrong about the sensitivity point and the net curtains point. Much has been made of the sort of the judge saying, well, they could have put net curtains in. Well, in any other case of nuisance, it's not the party affected by the activity isn't bound legally to prevent the impact of the activity. So if you're making noise next door to my property, I'm not expected to put ear defenders on to stop you causing me a nuisance. And it's the very same here. And in rights of light, if you build next to my building and diminish my light, I'm not expected to turn my lights on. You know, you shouldn't interfere with my rights in the first place. And it's the very same here. So I actually, I think the door is, you know, it's wide open here. All we need is a Supreme Court to decide that overlooking can, in the right case, amount to a legal nuisance. And I think the flat owners are close to being home.
Well, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I think the Supreme Court's going to look at this, if it looks at it, and it's going to follow what the Court of Appeal said, and that, you know, the cause of action in nuisance has existed for hundreds of years, and there's been no case on overlooking amounting to a nuisance. But there have been several cases that cover that point and say categorically not. Hmm. That is not protected by the tort of nuisance. So I can't see it. And all the points James makes, yeah, that's fine. The Court of Appeal said, you know, the sensitivities of a claimant don't come into it. But the locality does. Mm. You can't expect to live in a glass flat in central London and not be overlooked.
I agree with that entirely. But should I expect to have 1,650 people looking in at my windows every day? And I think the answer is no.
Well, if you choose to live next to the Tate Modern that's got planning consent for a viewing platform before your flat's even built, then yes.
Well, I think we've covered planning. I won't go back to planning, but I will come back on one point. The fact that there hasn't been a case is simply, I don't think the courts have witnessed anything of this sort. You mentioned the Australian case, which was an interesting case. It was a broadcaster had built a wooden stand on some property next door to a racetrack and was filming the racing, and effectively illegally, or not with the consent of the racetrack owner. But that's not about interference with enjoyment of property. It's really about money and profits. And in that case, you know, it wasn't found to be a legal nuisance. But that's a very different case to this. This is about the enjoyment of people's homes. And, you know, and I think overlooking must, you know, at this volume, I can't see how it couldn't be a nuisance.
Well, we'll just have to see.
I'm
not convinced.
As you mentioned, I mean, it's hard to conceive of there being another case that raised exactly the same issues. And I can't imagine there have been many people who rushed into launching an overlooking nuisance case in the last year after Mr. Justice Mann sort of opened the door for it. But if they have, I imagine they'll be pushing the brakes on their claims for the moment.
I think that's right. I mean, I think the way we saw the High Court decision, it was really legally interesting. A new law had been created, but given that Justice Mann hadn't said it was a nuisance in this case, it was never going to be enforced. So the unenforceable law. But I think, you know, so, you know, it will have very limited application. Mm. But we don't know how the environment will change. You talk about locality. There's the classic, you know, what will be a nuisance in Belgrave Square, you know, won't be a nuisance in Bermondsey. But, you know, Bermondsey is probably going to be more expensive than Belgrave Square in the not too distant future. And the way we use and live in London will change. So I think, you know, there are some interesting points there. We may find that we live in a way that causes more overlooking going forward.
As things get more crowded, almost certainly. So as things stand, post the Court of Appeal decision, if you have a client who wants to build something that may give clear views into a neighbour's property, what are the things that they will need to be aware of, and what is the best way of going about things to ensure that these issues are properly addressed?
I think there was a lot of talk about reasonableness between neighbours, and I think, you know, people should behave responsibly. If you're talking about an extension in the suburbs, or you're talking about a tower block in the city, I don't think in either case, with windows overlooking neighbouring property, there's going to be a problem as it stands. Even if the Supreme Court overturns the Court of Appeals decision, I still don't think there'd be a problem in that context because, you know, the law doesn't prevent development. The law encourages development, but responsible development. So I would think, you know, you ought to behave responsibly, you ought to think about your neighbour's interests, but I don't think you're going to have a legal problem as it stands, or even if the Supreme Court overturns the Court of Appeals decision.
No. And I think the same will apply for more extreme examples as well. I think we were discussing the other day, you know, what if you want to build a treehouse in your garden and it overlooks your neighbours? And, you know, issues between neighbours always become very personal and, you know, people can get very angry. So you can just see, if the Supreme Court really decided that overlooking can constitute a nuisance, you can just see the types of cases that that solicitors might start getting. Oh, my neighbour's built a treehouse in the garden, and it's overlooking, and its whole purpose is clearly to look into our house. And, well, as the law stands, I don't think that's going to give you any cause of action.
I think the floodgates argument is best dealt with in the application of the law rather than saying the law doesn't exist. And I think I've covered that already.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for coming along and updating us on the latest in the Tate case. Maybe we will get the chance to do this all over again next year if the Supreme Court does hear the case.
I hope we do.
Thanks, Jess.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks.